Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And we're going to start out this evening by playing a pre-recorded program I did earlier this week with Diane Massey, who works with the Be Alive Royal Jelly Company. And, I want you to hear what she has to say. And so we'll have Diane with us, hopefully, here in just a moment as we, let's see. We don't seem to be, we'll have her here in just a moment or two. This is a pre-recorded program we did with her. We'll be right back here in just a moment. We're going to be talking about a product that I personally have used for at least 8 years, and I'm almost 74 years old, and my wife started me on Be Alive Royal Jelly about 8 years ago, and one time she stopped it, and I really said that, I didn't feel quite so well, so I've been on this for some time. It really does help to increase your energy, and so I was rather surprised when the people from Be Alive actually approached us out of the blue and said we'd like to sponsor you for a time, and so it was a real pleasure. I agreed. Our guest this morning is Diane Massey, and Diane, you work there at Be Alive. Are you the vice president or what?
I'm actually the senior vice president, and I work side-by-side with the president for the past 11 years.
All right. Well, why don't you tell us about this product, which really does work to increase an individual's energy?
Well, I'm so happy to hear that it really has worked for you and for your wife, because most of our recommendations, if you can believe it or not, come from word of mouth. And that's always a nice thing. You know, what happened is it does increase your energy, stamina, and vitality, but it does that a natural way. You know, I often say, you know, many people will say, I'll take a cup of coffee and I can lift my energy level, or I can take a product that makes me jittery. Royal jelly is not like that. Royal jelly is a natural substance that comes from the beehive. And what it does is it lifts your energy level, but in a way where you'll experience that you're more productive in your day, it extends your hours in your day, where normally you would feel that, oh my goodness, around 2 or 3 o'clock, I have to close my eyes for a few minutes. You'll realize after taking royal jelly, that feeling is gone. And what I love about it is the reason you're getting that energy, Dr. Monteith, is because people are feeling they're getting more energized through good nutrition. It nourishes the body naturally, and when your body is completely nourished exactly the way God intended, energy is just a wonderful byproduct. So it's really a wonderful nutritional supplement that provides great nourishment for the body.
Well, how did you find out that it really worked? This is not something most people had ever even heard of using.
Royal jelly is not a household name. And I think many times when people do hear it, because it's called royal jelly, they think it's a jam or a jelly. It's not a jam or a jelly, friends. It really is the food of the queen bee and from the beehive. And the way we learned about it was our president and founder, Madeline Belletta, has been my dear friend for over 21 years. And she went through I knew her when she was well, raising her children, and then she went through a period of her life where she had what, I can't even describe it. It was an overwhelming tiredness. It was something that she woke up one day and all of a sudden felt like she had the flu, but it lasted a week. It lasted several months. It lasted a year and a half. She had difficulty and many challenges, and it was so hard for her to do the things that we all take for granted, like take care of your children or make dinners or sandwiches or even something as simple as holding a blow dryer in her hair was too hard for her to do. She was very weak. She had no strength, and getting out of bed was even a chore. At that time in her life, because it was so devastating, she went to many, many doctors. And the doctors couldn't really find out what was wrong with her. And sometimes, Dr. Monteith, that's worse. You know, you feel like, is this in my mind? Am I making this up? They can't find anything wrong with me. Well, having no answers for her, One of our friends from our church actually had heard about a substance called royal jelly and said, Madeline, I really think if you take this substance, it'll help you to regain your strength. Not heal you or cure you, but really help you to regain your strength. So they started to look for fresh royal jelly in America, and they couldn't find it anywhere. So what we did a lot of research and found it in London, England. So it took us a while, but we got the royal jelly from London, England for Madeline. Her husband faithfully gave it to her every single day, and the changes she saw were remarkable. Little by little, because it's a natural substance, not something like works overnight. I take an aspirin and my headache goes away. It's something that's natural, so it takes some time to work in the body. But little by little, Dr. Monteith, it was incredible. She started to sit up, to feel more strength. Within 3-6 months, she was thinking more clearly. Within 9 months, she was functioning normally again. And her medical doctor started to laugh at her and said, you think it's because of royal jelly? I'm not going to treat you. You need to come off that stuff. So she stopped taking it and little by little began to regress. And she felt that God created this wonderful substance in the beehive just for her. That's what she really thought. But when she saw that it helped her son who had some problems and other people that she knew, she said, gee, Lord, what do you want me to do with this precious substance you created? And really, that's when she started Be Alive. She started this company to really help God's children to begin to feel well. I think, Dr. Monteith, so many times we go through life settling for less than best. You know, you wake up in the morning and you think, my goodness, this is the way I have to feel. Run down, tired, and really not getting to all the things God has for me every single day to do. But what we've realized now, and we've been in business for 17 years, is that God is so wonderful and has created wonderful, wonderful substances in nature, which we call His pharmacy, to help restore His people to optimal health. And that's where we should all be living, in optimal health. And that's what I believe royal jelly does for people.
Well, he's certainly been around a long time. I know my wife had met Madeline down at one of the National Religious Broadcasters
yes.
conventions, and I actually had done some just a testimonial. I think this must have been 6 or 8 years ago. You know, just because she believed in the product, and of course that was our first introduction to it, and of course we've been using it really ever since then.
You know, it really changes lives, and I think that's why people stick with it, and that's why they say, wow, I didn't realize I can feel this good. I think it's amazing when you hear the story of what royal jelly is in the beehive, you realize why it works so well for us, and it's so powerful. Can I just share that story for a second?
Well, please do.
Royal jelly, and this is all written in the encyclopedia, so it's all documented information. Royal jelly in the beehive is the food of the queen bee. And the reason I believe it's such a powerful substance is, listen to what it does in the beehive. All baby bees are born genetically identical. There's no differentiation which will develop into a queen bee and which will develop into a worker bee. It's only determined by the food that they eat. If a worker bee feeds honey and pollen to a baby bee, it develops into another worker bee and lives for a few weeks, up to about 6 weeks. But if that baby bee, which is genetically identical, remember, is fed something called royal jelly, this precious substance, that bee develops into a beautiful queen bee and lives for up to 6 years. Now, the only difference is the food they were fed. They were born genetically identical. So it's a very, very rich superfood, we call it, food substance from the beehive that's filled with B-complex vitamins, 18 to 22 amino acids, living enzymes, minerals, trace minerals, vitamins A, C, and E, all synergistically put into a food substance. And I often say, Dr. Monteith, when God creates something, He sure knows what He's doing, because when we take this precious substance, it does wonderful, wonderful things to our bodies.
Well, is it in a separate part of the hive? How do you find the royal jelly in a beehive?
Well, actually, royal jelly in a beehive is very, very rare and very precious. You get about a half of a thumbnail in a beehive, and you'll only find it in one or two particular cells in a beehive. So it has to be hand-harvested. But what I love about the substance is, even though it's so precious, and for centuries it was only used by the very wealthy or the elite people in England and in China, Be Alive has now made it available for the masses. And I think today we are seeing people really feel so much better than ever before because of natural substances like royal jelly. I really believe it's God's pharmacy, where he's created many, many wonderful things to help restore his people to optimal health. Royal jelly is just one of them.
Well, you know, as a physician, of course, I was always amazed to realize how many of our pharmaceutical products came from flowers or from roots, or, you know, and they were there. They'd always been there, whether it was belladonna, which is atropine, or foxglove, which is digitalis. God put all these things here for a purpose, and man, of course, many times would just sort of stumble onto them.
I think it amazes me sometimes how man thinks he can actually know more than God, particularly in royal jelly. With most of the companies out there who sell royal jelly, they take this substance that I just told you about that God created. It looks like, I guess I'd say, a white custardy substance in the beehive. And that's what fresh royal jelly looks like. They actually take that fresh royal jelly, freeze dry it by removing all of the moisture, and turn it into a powder. And they believe they're doing something good by taking what God created and now altering it. But we believe that when you change the delicate balance of amino acids, all of the vitamins, the enzymes in a substance, it doesn't work as well. We really believe at Be Alive that you need to keep things as close to nature as God intended to get the best result. And I believe with our products, that's what we do. And I believe that's why our royal jelly works so well.
All right, so how do you actually prepare it? I know it's in a capsule. Do you then leave it in the original form, or what do you do?
We leave it in the fresh, original form, exactly the way God intended. And what we do is we have it in several forms at Be Alive. We have it in a capsule form. We have it in a form mixed with honey. We have it in a form in its natural state without honey for people who can't have sugar in their diet. We have it in several different forms. And what we try to do at Be Alive is we do not put our royal jelly in a health food store. And the reason is, or any stores for that matter, the reason is because we only have fresh royal jelly in all of our products, and it needs to be handled in a specific way. So what we do is we keep it in a temperature-controlled environment at Be Alive, and it is shipped directly to consumers, because when you have fresh royal jelly, it can't sit on a store shelf indefinitely. If it does, it's going to lose its potency. That's why people freeze-dry it, because they feel then it could sit on a store shelf indefinitely, but you're not giving the best product possible. And I really don't think that's what God would have us do. So we actually, the form that helped Madeline was fresh royal jelly. It's the way it is made in nature, and that is the only way we sell it at Be Alive. So we only put it through an 800 number. That's the only way people can get our product.
Well, would you like to give that 800 number for our listeners?
I'd be more than happy to. You can call for information, or you can call for the product. Our number is 1-866-233-7500. It's 866-233-7500. And anyone who would like to call to get more information about Be Alive Royal Jelly, if you decide that you would like to place an order, we will give you an extra 1 month supply of Royal Jelly free if you mention Dr. Monteith's show. So when you place an order for Royal Jelly, you'll get an extra 1 month supply absolutely free as our gift.
Well, I appreciate that, and of course, I hope people will remember to mention this, because, of course, that's the way that the Be Alive people will actually know that they heard about it, that you heard about it in our program. Well, I want to thank you so very, very much for being with us. It's really been a pleasure.
Well, thank you, Dr. Monteith, and I just want you to feel comfortable as well, because you've been so good in saying that you and your wife take our product. If anyone calls and decides to try our product, and after taking the product for a 3-month supply, after taking it for 3 months, they feel they don't see a difference in their how they feel, we will refund the full product cost. That's how much we believe this product will help them.
Well, that's a pretty good offer, but I suspect you don't get very many takers on that.
We don't, but we believe in it so much. We want people to feel that they don't have to worry. They can order it and feel very, very safe and very comfortable with placing their order.
Well, God bless you, and thank you so very much for being with us here.
Thank you so much, and you continue to stay healthy, both you and your wife.
I will. Bye-bye.
Thank you. God bless you.
And you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, this is Dr. Stan. And, of course, that was Diane Massey, who's vice president. And their telephone number, again, is 866-233-7500. That's 1-866-233-7500. And, of course, the rest of this evening, why, we're just going to have open lines. If you're out there across America and you have something you'd like to talk about, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-245-4237. 1-888-245-4237. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But I thought maybe this evening I'd talk about this book. I've just finished reading it. It's Robert Baer's book, See No Evil. And he was apparently about 21 years with the Central Intelligence Agency. And he ended up, of course, in charge of a lot of the CIA activities in the Middle East. And he actually lived in many of these out-of-the-way posts throughout the world. And, of course, the book starts asking the question, who was responsible for the bombing of the embassy in Beirut back in 1983? And then not very long after that, of course, was the bombing of the American and the French barracks there. And you remember a large number of our Marines were killed in that bombing. But who was really behind all of this? And he starts out the book asking that question. And, of course, he's able to zero in on one a gentleman who he felt sort of coordinated this. But there had to be some force behind everything that was going on. And, of course, it's really an amazing book because, of course, it starts out with that quotation from a reporter who had been told by a high-ranking, one of the highest-ranking CIA officials, and off the record, that when the dust settled after September 11th, the American people would look at what had happened not as a failure, but as a success for the American intelligence agencies. Now, how could the death of 3,000 Americans be looked upon as a success? Only, of course, if it was for a greater good. And that greater good, of course, will be taking us into the war in the Middle East. And, of course, I am not really sure that Mr. Baer really understood much of what he uncovered, but the book is really fascinating because it goes into the fact that, for instance, we kept Saddam Hussein in power. And he talks about how in 1993, why the Iraqis military wanted to overthrow Saddam Hussein. And he writes this book. Remember that it's going to be gone over by the CIA censors. So he has to sort of put things into, well, this is what the Iraqis believe. The Iraqis believe the American government turned over the names of the Iraqi generals to Saddam Hussein so they could be tortured and killed. And that was the end of the effort by the military to overthrow Saddam Hussein in 1993. Well, in 1995, while Robert Baer was operating out of Kurdistan, he was in charge of the CIA operation there, when a Iraqi general came to him and asked if the United States would help them, because there was another Iraqi military plot to overthrow Saddam Hussein. And at that time, in Iraq, of course, the UN sanctions were completely on. Iraq could not legally sell any oil, and yet we were allowing them to sell oil. The oil was being brought out of Iraq and being brought through trucks through Kurdistan, when, of course, the people in Kurdistan were making a little money on that. And, of course, Saddam Hussein was making a lot of money. And then the oil was being delivered into Turkey, and the American government knew that. We allowed Saddam Hussein to make the money. We allowed him to stay in power. And, of course, there was tremendous unrest in the area. I mean, a lot of the soldiers were deserting. In fact, the only way they could keep the soldiers in the Iraqi army was to cut off their ears. And night after night on Iraqi television, you would see the pictures of young men with no ears and blood streaming down over their faces. That's how Saddam Hussein maintained his power. Well, then in 1995, when Robert Baer had was in Kurdistan, another Iraqi general came up, and, of course, he wanted America to help them, because in 1995 there was another attempt to overthrow Saddam Hussein. And again, of course, the Americans betrayed them and betrayed all the officers, and they were captured and tortured to death. And, you know, after this has happened a couple of times, it really does take the wind out of the sails of the people within Iraq who want to overthrow the tyrant. In fact, I don't know why anybody in Iraq should have been foolish enough to think that we would back them, getting rid of Saddam Hussein. It was in 1991, during the Gulf War, when the President George Herbert Walker Bush had promised the people of the Kurdistan and the people living in the south, the Shiite Muslims who didn't like Saddam Hussein, and of course, about only 20% of the population are Sunni Muslims. They're the ones who traditionally would back Saddam, because he's a Sunni Muslim. But the Shia Muslims in the south hated Saddam. The Kurds in the north hated Saddam. And so George Herbert Walker Bush promised them that they would rise up against Saddam Hussein, that America would come in and would overthrow Saddam Hussein. We just want to see you rise up. And, of course, they rose up, and we betrayed them as well. And, of course, they were slaughtered and by the tens, if not the hundreds of thousands. We had actually financed Saddam Hussein since the 1970s, even before he took power. We certainly backed him from 1983 on openly. We left him in power after the episode after the Gulf War. We kept him in power when there was an effort to overthrow him in 93 and again in 1995. And of course, we were allowing him to smuggle oil out. And all we had to do is, Robert Baer said in his book, all we had to do is put a telephone call into Turkey and say, look, cut off all of this oil that's being smuggled out of Iraq through Kurdistan into your country. We will simply starve Saddam Hussein, into submission. But that was never the power. Our purpose was always to keep him in power. And you must understand how the game is played. It's never played the way that the average American understands. Well, anyway, of course, the story really gets very interesting, pointing out how Russian money from the KGB, was being funneled into both the Republican and the Democrat parties, how people representing Yeltsin, and there was a man that they described there, his name was Roger, and he was an oil developer, and he had no money, but he was always spending it lavishly. In other words, he didn't have any money. It was obviously coming from the Chinese communists and the Russians, and they were funneling money into the United States, not only into Bill Clinton's campaign that funneled it into the Republican coffers under George Herbert Walker Bush, and yes, even previously into the Reagan administration. And of course, this was the last thing that they wanted brought out in Washington, D.C. I mean, it's all right to talk about the wicked Chinese communists funneling money into Bill Clinton's campaign, but don't ever talk about the bipartisan treason that goes on. And of course, when Robert Baer tried to expose the fact that money was being given by the Russians and by the Chinese communists and funneled in from Asia to the Clinton campaign, why, of course, everything was done to silence that. And when they would have the investigations, and he was called to testify, instead of trying to get the information before a grand jury, why, of course, the federal prosecutors would try to discredit him. And really, the story, of course, gets very, very interesting, because it points out that the great oil companies, mentioned specifically Exxon and Amco and British Petroleum and Mobil, and they're all just basically own the State Department. And the State Department will give calls and instructions to various countries like Azerbaijan, and they will say Exxon is going to get 5% of the money that's gained from the oil that flows through your property, through your country. And of course, they're going to build a pipeline from the Caspian to Armenia and to Azerbaijan, and then, of course, out to the, I guess, through Turkey on into the Mediterranean, where, of course, it'd be picked up by ships. But, of course, all of this, of course, was being manipulated by the oil companies. And the entire purpose of our State Department was not simply to support, American interests. It was to support specific companies. And one of them specifically was Exxon. And the stipulation was, well, Exxon will get their routine 5% from everything that crosses Azerbaijan. You begin to get this very calloused attitude that nothing is as it appears to be, and money simply buys politicians, or as we've always said, why we have some of the finest politicians in Washington, D.C. that money can buy. He pointed out that Roger was a I believe he was Lebanese. He was a professional con man. He was an organizer, and he was always figuring an angle. And of course, how did he get the influence he did? Well, he employed people like Senator Kennedy's wife. It gave her a real plus job with a lot of money, and then of course he could depend on Ted Kennedy's help. But this isn't anything unusual. Tom Daschle's wife, Linda Daschle, is involved in a number of business deals, and then of course the government will favor the company she works for. This is how the game is really played. It's sort of like that. You remember when Bill Clinton was given $10 million advance on a book he was going to write about his biography? Has anybody read that book? And, of course, Hillary Clinton got $8 million for the book that she was going to write. Has anybody read the book? The books aren't even written, to my knowledge. If they're going to be written, they're going to be written by ghosts. Do you honestly believe that they're going to be able to make, back the $10 million they gave to Bill Clinton or the $8 million they gave to Hillary? They only gave the Pope $8 million for his biography. And here, Catholics all throughout the world will buy the book by the Pope. How many Americans are going to, buy Bill Clinton's biography, which he hasn't even written, and it isn't even written yet? This is all payoffs. And then, of course, Bill Clinton made $10 million last year giving speaking engagements, some of them in communist China, 30-minute speech, $250,000. This is what makes the world go around. This is how the game is really played. And this has happened because America has lost its moral foundation. And the good people have become so callous and indifferent as long as times are good that they're quite willing simply to allow these things to unfold. And it's about time that at least there was a small voice out here that's saying Washington, D.C. is corrupt, and if this Washington doesn't repent and this country doesn't repent, then God's vengeance is going to come to America. And I believe that vengeance is already beginning to unfold as we're beginning to move into a third world war, which is totally, totally created. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. But right now, let me just suggest that you're out there and use anything you'd like to talk about. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 1-888-245-4237. That's 888-245-4237. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, and actually out across the world, if you want to call us, at 831-464-8295. Well, the interesting thing about Robert Baer's book, I mean, a lot of interesting things. It's a good read, well worthwhile reading, over and above the fact that the high official in the CIA said that what happened on September 11th would be one day looked upon as a success, not as a failure. And, of course, what it means is, of course, they were willing to sacrifice 3,000 lives for a bigger advantage. And that bigger advantage, I believe, is the coming Third World War. That will not simply involve Iraq. It will involve Iran. Because, of course, the CIA has known since 1983 that the Iranians were behind the bombing of the, first of all, the American embassy in Beirut, and then later on the embassy, the barracks. Both the French and the American barracks in Iran, and they've covered that fact up very, very carefully. And we keep talking about, Khatami, who's the current the president of Iran, and how he is. He is the moderate. He's not a moderate at all. He's got terrorists on his staff. But you have to understand, we brought the Iranian government to power. You see, people have forgotten how we brought the Iranian government to power. This radical terrorist movement, we created it. Now, you go back in time, it was 1953 when there was a fellow named Mossadegh, and he was the elected prime minister of Iran. So a man who was a colonel, as I remember, his name was Schwarzkopf. He was the father of General Schwarzkopf, and Colonel Schwarzkopf was a retired police officer, as I remember, and he was given $10 million to go over and buy off the Iranian military and, of course, get them to topple Mossadegh and bring the Shah of Iran to power. So then we bring the Shah of Iran to power, and he's an enlightened despot, but he's still a despot. And, of course, anybody who opposes him gets killed or tortured. But that's how despots work. I mean, that's in the reality. Whenever you've got an authoritarian system and somebody wants to overthrow your system, why, you have to either arrest them or exile them or simply torture them and kill them. and certainly the Shaw's police were not necessarily Boy Scouts at all. Well, right now, we're going to be coming back in just a moment here. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back here on Radio Liberty when we return. Why we will be asking for your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or at 464-8295. And we'll be back here in just a moment. Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to point out to you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we primarily depend upon our listeners out there to help us. Rarely we will have a sponsor for a month or so, but in the case of our Be Alive, they're going to be helping us for at least for 1 month. But, of course, ordinarily we depend upon the people out there who join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and those people who partner with us in our effort to educate the American people. So if you'd like to, of course, join the Radio Liberty family, and those who do, of course, get our four best tapes of the month, they get our monthly newsletter, but more than that, they're helping us bring the truth to people across America. And a little bit by little bit, we've gradually expanded our ministry to the point where now, well, our Saturday program, the full hour program, is heard on six stations across America. Our other Saturday program is heard about 33 or 34 stations across America. So we're getting up pretty close. Just the Saturday programs are heard almost by 40 stations across America. Now, all in all, we have about 50 stations or outlets that will hear some of our programs every week. And, of course, it's not the 500 or 600 station Rush Limbaugh is on. But remember, we have to pay for our time on most of the stations. A few of the networks we're on at minimal cost or no cost to us, but most of them, of course, we have to fund, and that's where, of course, where our supporters come in, and the funding, of course, goes to buy radio time or television time or telephone time or answering service time, and believe me, a lot of expenses when you do what we do, but, of course, with the loyal support of people who believe that there's a problem and are willing to partner with us, why we've been able to gradually expand our coverage. And right now, of course, we're heard on two great stations in California on the weekend, of course, the Portland station, and we're hoping to get onto a Seattle station. That's our hope later this month or next month as the funds become available. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, if you'd like to work with us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation conceived under God can long endure, give us a call at 464-8295 or better still, call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Because we would love to welcome you into the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, if you're, this is going to be a bad evening because we just found one of our guests for the next hour is under the weather. That's Randy Thomason. So if you're out there in the listening audience, remember our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-245-4237. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 245-4237, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. 464-8295, and let me just mention that we are going to be having a special all-day conference in the Aptos, California on the 23rd of November. And, of course, we don't expect the people from Washington to come down, although we'd love to have you come down. But we're going to have, of course, all of our regular speakers. We're going to have Joan Parris will be there, Jeannie Soderman, Brad Dacus, Bill Sardi. And I'll be talking as well, trying to get you to understand what's happening, what the future holds, what you need to do to prepare yourself, because I believe there's going to be biological terrorism. They're not spending all the time to condition our minds to accept this unless they know something is going to happen. And then in addition to that, of course, what are you going to do financially? Because America is heading to some very, very difficult financial problems at the present time, and we certainly think that you better start making your plans now for the difficult times that lie ahead. Well, let's get back, of course, to the story we were telling you of Robert Baer's book, See No Evil. So the underlying, of course, theme of the whole book is who was really responsible for the bombing of the American embassy, the American barracks in Iran, pardon me, in Beirut back in 1983. And, of course, it becomes increasingly obvious that the CIA always knew the Iranians were behind this. And they did absolutely nothing about it. Because, you see, the United States had brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power. Now, I told you earlier that we had actually put the Shah in power in 1953. And if you want to check this out, it's in Tragedy and Hope, a History of the World in Our Time, Professor Quigley's book, where he talks about how Colonel Schwarzkopf, General Schwarzkopf's father, and of course you have to understand that we're talking about intergenerational organizations that go from father to son, and you reward the father and then you reward the son, and that's how you get to be a four-star general anyway. Colonel Schwarzkopf in 1953 had bribed the armies to overthrow Mossadegh, the duly elected president, to bring the Shah to power. Well, of course, then we fast forward until 1979, and of course our agents are over there, and they're bribing the army and telling them not to back the Shah of Iran. And of course we put an arms embargo on him, we demand that he release all the dissidents, we do everything we can to stimulate the radical Islamic movement, knowing full well that the Ayatollah Khomeini will come to power once we topple the Shah. And then of course our ambassador goes to the Shah of Iran and says, you will leave tomorrow. Now that's exactly what the American ambassador did to Batista in Cuba in 1959. He told him, you will leave tomorrow. And I know that because I talked to the American ambassador. His name was Earl C. Smith or Earl W. Smith. And he told me that story of how he was ordered as ambassador to tell Batista, you will leave Cuba tomorrow. That's exactly what happened to Somoza in Nicaragua. That's how we brought the Sandinista to power and created, once again, the best enemy money could buy. Our ambassador told Somoza, you will leave tomorrow. Well, that's what our ambassador told the Shah of Iran, you will leave Iran tomorrow. And, of course, as soon as he left, we ensured that the Ayatollah Khomeini would come to power, the best enemy money could buy. And then, of course, they start this whole Islamic terrorist movement. And then, of course, the following year, why we're at war in Afghanistan, it was in July of 1979 that we began funding the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, knowing full well that they would precipitate the Soviet invasion. And this is all covered in a book called Unholy Wars by John Cooley, and he even quotes Brzezinski, the National Security Advisor, David Rockefeller's man, David Rockefeller, who has strong ties to the oil companies, of course, who really controls many of the international oil companies that have American-based. And Brzezinski, of course, talks Carter into beginning to fund the Mujahideen, knowing full well it will precipitate the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan and the war. And, of course, now we've got a war going in Afghanistan. We begin recruiting Muslims throughout the world to fight in this holy war in Afghanistan, and we indoctrinate them in these radical Islamic beliefs, and we begin to produce the Islamic terrorist movement, Osama bin Laden, and the best enemies that money could buy. And of course, pretty soon Osama bin Laden is working for the Iranians, and that's what Robert Baer brings out. Osama bin Laden, you've been told, he's a Sunni, and they're Shiite Muslims, and so he's not going to work with them, and that really isn't true. It's brought out very, very clearly in a number of books. Bin Laden, the man who declared war on America, by Joseph Badansky, and in Robert Baer's book, that Osama bin Laden and the Iranians are working together. But we can't tell the American people that, because, of course, if they understood that, why would we go to war with Afghanistan? We went to war with Afghanistan to get the pipeline through there. And so we would have a place to begin stationing our troops in preparation for the attack on Iraq. But believe me, Iraq is just the beginning of the Third World War. Well, right now we've got Nathan calling in. He's been holding on the line very patiently. But a lot of these things, of course, Robert Baer covers. I don't think he really understands that we actually created the Iranian terrorist movement and the whole Islamic terrorist movement. But at least he contributes a lot of the missing pieces, which will help you better to understand how we got into the mess we are today. Nathan, how are you doing?
Hi, this is Open Line Hour.
This is Open Line Hour, right.
Okay. Well, before I get to my main point, just a quick question. In your opinion, was Mossadegh a communist, or was he just an elected leader labeled a communist in order to easily remove him?
You're talking about the Prime Minister of
the one, Iran, the one before
Mossadegh,
the Shah,
right?
Yeah. The Prime Minister of Iran before the
right.
Shah.
Right, and I don't think he was a communist. He may have been a Marxist, but then we got a lot of Marxists around. I don't think he was a hardline. There no, you have to understand, basically, there is no communism in the world. There never has been. Really, this is entirely an elitist system. These people, the leaders of communism don't believe in communism. It is simply a vehicle of obtaining power. And, of course, they have an elite system in their countries just like we have in ours.
Sure,
okay.
Of course. Oh yeah, no, definitely. It's not a. I don't believe that we put these people in a lot of cases, the Shah, Somoza, Batista, in power, and it's we've betrayed some of our own founding ideas in doing so, our own commitments to Republican institutions, and like you say, God does judge nations, and I sure hope that we repent and He forgives us for doing that. But my main point I really wanted to get onto was. You bring up the occult, such subjects as the occult architecture of Washington, D.C., and the occult symbols, and you had Dr. Kathy Burns on the other day. Could you bring on a guest who could help your listeners understand the mechanics of how that works? In other words, how these occult symbols...
Okay, there is a book. It's called The Occult Architecture of the of Our Nation's Capital.
Yes.
Actually, it's written by an Englishman, so I haven't been able to get him as a guest, but we do carry the book, published by HarperCollins, and it simply points out, this is a man who had gone over to all the Masons and studied the whole background of the architecture laying out of the city of New York, pardon me, of Washington, D.C. It was all laid out originally and was laid out in occult and astrological patterns. And you'll see the pentagrams there. You'll see the goat's head and the ears of the goat coming off the Capitol building. And then you'll see the Masonic apron laid out with this big park that they have there. And then, of course, you'll see the Washington Monument, which is basically a phallic symbol right below the Masonic apron. So it's all there. It's all explained in this book, the occult architecture of our nation's capital. And we're going back to the early 1800s when this whole thing was laid out. But you see, they can't let the American people understand that. Because, of course, most people think we're a Christian nation, and we were. But, of course, the occult was always here. And that, of course, is how we understand the good and the bad of our own nation. And the tragedy is, of course, the Christian leaders simply gave up their authority and their responsibility many years ago and allowed the occult to take over completely and totally back in the 1930s under FDR.
Was an excellent book, The Occult Architecture of Washington, D.C. by David Ovason. But I was thinking more of is there something that those of us out here who are simply John Q. person, is there some... a way by which we can live in this world of occult symbols and yet avoid their influence through some manner of understanding of how the system works so that we don't get sucked into it. That's basically what I'm asking.
Well, I'll tell you what, man, Nathan, it's very hard not to get sucked into it because it completely surrounds us. And so many people somebody will give them a book to read. And they'll begin to read this book. It may be rather fascinating. You'll have a lot of interesting things to say. What they do not understand is that they've opened up their mind to the demonic forces. And because the demons can enter you through written word, just as they can enter you through music, you can invite them in inadvertently by going into an occult bookstore and looking around. And if you don't have the protection of the Holy Spirit, why, you're in real trouble. So, the forces are there. Now, of course, you can travel to Washington, D.C. It's a beautiful city, and I love certainly the Lincoln Memorial and the Washington Memorial and the Jefferson Memorial, certainly the most beautiful of all the buildings there in Washington, D.C. But, of course, the occult influence is there as well as the Christian influence. And there are all sorts of pictures there going into the Christian foundation of our nation, but the occult symbols are hidden. But every major federal building in Washington, D.C. has a Masonic emblem on it. So you have this dualism, as it were. And, of course, this is what the Zoroastrians talked about and the Manichaeans. There's always been a dualism out there. But of course, their dualism is entirely different than the dualism of the Old and New Testaments. So how can you protect yourself? You're going to have to rely upon the protection of the Holy Spirit, because you can't do this on your own.
Well, and of course, I think you put it beautifully. I would also say that Americans need to act as well as have faith, and people need to follow the laws of God, and it's important that the American community does this, or obviously these symbols won't have any power over us if we actually are following in the way of God. He will shield us. This I do know. I mean, I don't know much beyond it. I would hope for you and the other experts to tell me what I would want to know beyond this, but I do know that if we follow the laws of God, you know, he does shield us, and he does grant us a measure of protection. As well as have faith in him, certainly have faith in him and do his will. It's still hard.
Of course it is.
And these symbols are powerful.
I come under not infrequently under demonic oppression. And, of course, the one thing that you have to learn, and I have learned through the years, and I was told this by my minister many years ago, you know, when you come under demonic oppression, you have to actually face what's happening. And you have to actually, you see, I as a Christian can actually command the demons to leave me alone. And I can simply implore in the name of the blood of Jesus Christ those demons to abandon me and leave me alone. And they have to obey. We have a woman who very frequently on our program, her name is Jane Whiting, and she came from a family of a satanic ritual abuse. She was a victim of satanic ritual abuse starting at the age of 3 years of age. And, of course, now she has a deliverance ministry. And, you know, she will, we were talking to her just this last week, and she was saying that very often when she will be doing a deliverance on someone, and, of course, the demon will begin speaking, you know, either in a foreign language or maybe even levitating the individual to frighten her to death. And, of course, because she's confident in the Spirit of the Lord, she will order these demons to give their names, and she will order them to leave the individual. And the demon has to obey her. And the demon will do all sorts of things to avoid it. And you tell people stories like this, and they say, oh, come on now, that sounds like the X-Files. I mean, that doesn't happen in real life. And the tragedy is it does happen in real life. And, of course, as our churches are telling people that there is a spiritual battle going on. So you have to actually be in a position where you can order the demons to leave you alone. Otherwise, of course, they will enter and eventually control you. And we really live in a very dangerous and terrifying world today. And if you don't have that coverage of the Holy Spirit, why, you're in real trouble.
Now, Miss Whiting broke away from an Illuminati bloodline.
Right.
Influence, as I recall. I believe she actually hosted your program at one time.
Yes,
with her husband.
Right. She and her husband. We'll have to have them back on again. And as a result of being on our program, they get all sorts of referrals now from all over the country. And
sure.
And so they have a full-time ministry. In fact, her husband said, when I talked to him about a month ago, he said, we can't afford to get on your program. We've got too many people we're dealing with now. But, you know, of course, we will get them on again because they do a great job and they help to let people understand that we are involved in a spiritual battle. This is not imaginary. The demonic forces are out there and they're working, of course, at the highest levels of our government today, and they're dragging us into this war. This whole thing behind this effort to get into a war of satanic forces that will revel in the horror and the blood and the suffering that's going to take place.
Well, thank you very much, Doctor. You've been very helpful. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you, Nathan.
Bye-bye. Have a good evening.
Okay, fine. Well, that was sort of a deep subject, but as long as Nathan brought it up, I think it's important that you understand that we are involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological battlefield. Our telephone number, again, is 888-24-LIBERTY or 888-245-4237. That's 888-24-LIBERTY or 888-245-4237, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But you know, it was very interesting, and I may have commented on this before, but I'm going to comment on it again. There's a fascinating newsletter. It's written by Richard Mayberry. It's called The Early Warning Letter. And he's been writing for some time about Chaos Stan, C-H-A-O-S, STAN, Chaos Stan. And of course, Chaos Stan is in the Middle Eastern area and expands out from there, but it's centered in the Middle East. And of course, the whole idea is that this is going to be the center of the coming chaos. And of course, Chaos Stan, they have Kyrgyzstan and Turkmenistan and, Uzbekistan, and they have Pakistan and Afghanistan. And so he calls that area Chaos Stan. But in the last newsletter, he was saying that he had written several books on World War I and World War II. And the thing that intrigued him about these wars was that they didn't make any sense. And he said, you know, during the last 2 years of the Second World War, 1 million people died every month. 1 million people died every month. And, of course, there was so many occasions when the wars could have been ended. The Germans wanted to end the war. They wanted to surrender. We wouldn't let them surrender. The Japanese wanted to surrender. We wouldn't let them surrender. And then, of course, he said, you know, after surveying what happened, he was firmly convinced there was a thing, and he capitalized the T in thing, that wanted to see death and destruction. And, of course, had this sort of almost mystical, mysterious element about it as he wrote about the thing. Well, of course, what he's really talking about, and whether he knew it or not, he was really talking about Satan. But that's what it's really all about. There really is Satan out there. And Satan wants, of course, to take as many souls to hell with him as he possibly can. And I believe that we are entering the Third World War, and I believe there's going to be terrible, terrible consequences. And as I pointed out this afternoon, simply quoting Colonel House's article in Foreign Affairs magazine back in June of 1923, where he said, you know, if war had not come in 14 and in fierce and exaggerated form, why the idea of an association of nations would probably have remained dormant, because great changes seldom materialize without great upheavals. Great changes seldom materialize without great upheavals. And that's what they really want. They want a great upheaval now. There's going to be terrible financial chaos in America. I believe that there's going to be a biological attack, and I believe that there's going to be a coming chaos right here in the United States and breakdown and structure of government. I believe, of course, that there's going to be terrible, terrible consequences from this coming war that we're entering. Because when you start a war, you never know how it'll enter, how it'll end. And we know that they had an assassination in Sarajevo in 1914 when Archduke Ferdinand was assassinated. And there was a little difference between Austria-Hungary and the Serbian government. And, of course, this could have been worked out very amicably. And instead of that, we got World War I with the destruction of the Russian Empire and the Austro-Hungarian Empire and the German Empire, and the Turkish Empire, and of course, the Byzantine Empire. Anyway, certainly the whole world was changed by World War I. And until you understand that this is why wars are fought, they're not fought for profits, although some people make profits. But it's sort of like wet streets don't create rain. The rain creates the wet streets, and the wars create the profits, but that's not the reason they're fought. And this is the Marxist solution, and it's the wrong thing. You have to understand who really creates the wars. It's not the munitions manufacturers, although they benefit. It's not the oil companies, although they benefit. It's not the central bankers, other than the fact that many of them are actually tied into this truly satanic conspiracy for the souls of men. Well, we've got John calling from Great Falls. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan.
Good to have you with us.
Yeah.
Isn't that Great Falls, Montana? Post Falls. Where's Post Falls?
In the panhandle of Idaho.
Okay, fine. You're up there by Coeur d'Alene then.
Indeed I am.
Okay, good to have you with us.
Yes, the thing that kind of weighs on my mind, I've been rereading the book Sellout by Attorney David Shippers,
who
was the chief counsel to the House managers in the impeachment trial. And, you know, it almost makes me physically ill to contemplate that. And I guess the question in this election season I would ask people to prayerfully consider is, you know, these senators are coming to us hat in hand asking for their jobs back. And unfortunately, there's too many of them of the 107th Senate that was there present at that sordid trial that are why should we reward them with our vote? Why should we reward them for...
But how did your senator vote, do you know?
Well, in the end, my senator voted for conviction. But, Stan, it was all set up ahead of time because it was the first impeachment trial, as you know, having read that book, in U.S. history, for which there were no live witnesses, no evidence brought forward. And on all the procedural votes, it was 100-0.
No, but you understand what really happened. If you've read the book, and for our listeners who haven't read it, David Sipper's book, Sell Out, is very important, because they've got a slam-dunk case on Clinton. They're planning on a 3-month trial, and the leaders of the House of Representatives, the 10 managers from the House, go ahead and they meet with the leaders of the Senate, specifically the current head of the Senate, and tell me what his name is. It just slips me right at the present moment.
Trent Lott?
Trent Lott, sure. And yeah. Trent Lott says, we'll give you 3 days. We're not going to get caught up in this. We're just not going to have a trial. Well, what people don't understand is that Trent Lott is a 33rd degree Mason. His loyalty is not to the United States. It's to the brotherhood that he serves and serves so loyally. And, of course, Bill Clinton is the highest-ranking demolay in the country. And, of course, the demolays are tied into the Masons. And the Masons swear that they will never, convict a fellow Mason, even if guilty of murder or treason. And so there was no way that the Masonic members of the United States Senate were going to vote against Bill Clinton. And that's why, of course, Arlen Specter, who was a Republican, switched over and voted with the Democrats, and why several of the Republicans switched over and voted with the Democrats because they were Masons. And that was where their loyalty lay. But that is never brought out. That's never brought out. And until we have people whose loyalty is to America and not to a secret society or to some other occult movement like the Skull and Bones, we will never regain our freedom. But a lot of people, when they talk about this, they're vilified. And I did a program this afternoon, and somebody was saying that even one of the leading conservative spokesmen who has programs all across America, but whenever somebody comes on, talks about the conspiracy, the Illuminati, he immediately marginalizes them and ridicules them. And I'm not talking about Rush Limbaugh. I'm talking about people who... And the gentleman may just not even know what he's talking about. He may never have done the homework, but unfortunately this will sway a lot of good Christians. Because if you talk about Christ, and then of course you ridicule people who talk about this satanic conspiracy, why people tend to identify with the spokesman rather than with the truth, and there really is a satanic conspiracy, there always has been. But that's the real background behind the effort to impeach Bill Clinton, in my estimation.
Yes, well, and you mentioned before, Dr. Stan, the war in the Balkans in 1914, but a lot of people don't realize that 60,000 people lost their homes due to Monica's war, and 12,000 lost their lives. And there's a lot of blood on the hands of those senators, as far as I'm concerned, because if there had anything like a real impeachment trial, and a real charade, it was a charade.
Sure was.
And if it had been anything like Nixon was virtually paralyzed in 1974.
You're absolutely right, but the thing was Bill Clinton obviously knew he was going to get away with it because he knew he had the support of the Masons within the United States Senate.
And he had
nothing
did.
To worry about. With Trent Lott, a 33rd degree Mason, he had nothing to worry about.
Well, and sadly, my senator was just a puppet for Trent Lott. And it was the procedural votes that clinched that trial. And
right.
On all the procedural votes, it was 100-0. There's not a single member of the 107th Senate that's worthy of the office.
Well, then maybe you ought to just vote your Senate out. But we've got to get the people educated. And until they're educated and they understand the spiritual nature of what we're up against, nothing's going to change. And we're suddenly gone off the air. If you want to hang on till the next hour, you certainly may. But right now, we're going to have to... because we're not broadcasting up in your area.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks so much, John.
Goodbye.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And but hold your calls for the few minutes here because, of course, we have with us on the line Brad Dacus from the Pacific Justice Foundation. Brad, how are you doing tonight?
Great to be on the program. Doing well, Dr. Stanley.
Okay, fine. And you got that date for the 23rd of November all lined up there to come down here and tell us what's going on?
Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, too, and we're hoping we're going to get a real good turnout there. And I think we're going to get the kickoff position in the morning, so we'll get you up right and early. But tell us what's happening as far as this battle that you're engaged in, trying to protect Christians from these people who are so really anti-Christian in their outlook and doing everything they can to undermine the position and rights of the Christians of this country.
Well, we have a client right now that we're representing. It's a Christian foster care agency, a very large one down in Southern California. And they're dealing with an issue, regulations that could require them to have to give kids to homosexual couples, even though it totally goes against their convictions. Well, one of the main things we were looking at was this bill that was pending before Governor Gray Davis, AB 2651, I believe, which was going to make this a state law, not just merely regulation, but state law. Well, regulations we can challenge if they're not grounded by state law, but if they make it a state law, then we'd be in a very difficult situation representing our client. Well, the good news is that Governor Gray Davis did veto this anti-family legislation, which would have also required a homosexual sensitivity training for all foster care parents and the placement of children in family environments that are totally divergent from their upbringing and the beliefs of them and their families. And, of course, that's not in the child's best interest, but this is what this bill is going to do. And so the governor vetoed it, and that's good. However, here's the bad sign, and here's the truth. We're convinced the only reason he vetoed this, Dr. Stanley, is because this election's coming up.
Right, I agree with you totally. But it just goes to show you that he knows the majority of the people would be, of course, incensed by doing that. And, of course, as soon as if he gets reelected, why he will go ahead and get it through next year.
That's absolutely right. We weighed in on it this year, made our opposition well known, as well as others. But next year, there's a very good probability that it will come up again and that he will sign into law if he's reelected governor. So I think people just need to really be involved this election to let their express their voices at the ballot box and really be disciplined in doing so, because I tell you, we at the Pacific Justice Institute are going to have some greater difficulties next year potentially because of these new laws and less laws that we could use to battle these new laws.
Well, let's hope that things do work out in November, that the good people will get involved and get out there, and we'll be doing some programs on that in the next couple of weeks, talking about what the issues are and who the various candidates are. Do you have any other programs you wanted to talk about?
I think that's about it for now, and if anyone would like to keep up with our cases, they can please take a look at our webpage. It's pacificjustice.org, pacificjustice.org. And our toll-free number is 888-305-9129, 888-305-9129. And I'm really looking forward to visiting and participating in that wonderful conference that you're going to be putting on later on in November.
All right, fine. Well, thank you so much again. That number is 888-305-9129. Thanks so very much for being with us, Brad.
Thank you, Dr. Stanley.
Bye-bye. And, of course, Brad is on the front lines up there. And if cases that involve Christian rights, and of course that we have added Christian bigots out there who are intent upon destroying Christianity. The trouble is sometimes they're living and working at the highest levels of our government. And they're all part of a network of this occult that, of course, permeates every aspect of our society. Because you have to understand this is not simply atheism, although some of the people are atheists. But many of them, of course, have embraced a different religion. And there is a paradigm shift. It goes from Christianity to atheism. Then, of course, the next shift is into the occult, where, of course, there's an intense hatred of Christianity. And a lot of atheists don't necessarily hate Christianity. Some of them do, but a lot of them don't. They just can't embrace Christianity. But, of course, as G.K. Chesterton once said, that when you disbelieve Christianity, it's not that you believe nothing, but that you will believe anything. And, of course, this takes them on into the world of occultism and, of course, open themselves up to these dark and serious demonic forces. So certainly let me caution you that we will lose this country if we do not restore the Christian foundation. And our job is to do the best we can to act as a voice out here, alarming people to try to make them understand that if this country and its people do not repent, then, of course, this country will be doomed. And I believe we are moving into a third world war, and there are going to be terrible, terrible implications and terrible things happening here in America. And we want people to begin to prepare themselves physically and financially and psychologically for what lies ahead. Because, of course, as Nathan asked during the first hour, what can you do to protect yourself? I will tell you the only thing that you can do is make your preparations and then to learn to rely upon our Lord. Because without his help, why, none of us are going to get through with what lies ahead. Well, our telephone number is 464-8295 or out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And don't be bashful to call in. We're supposed to have Randy Thomason, and Randy Thomason was sick. Our special guest this afternoon, Bill Gertz, was sick. And so we're not doing very well, I'm afraid, at this time. But, of course, we're going to have to be here for the next hour, and, of course, we'd love to hear from you. But, of course, we had John calling from Post Falls during the last hour, and he was talking about David Shippers, and, of course, his book, Sellout, which, incidentally, we do carry through our ministry. But there's another aspect to that story, and that is, of course, about it was after David had written the book, Sellout, that he was contacted by Jaina Davis. And Jaina, of course, had worked for Channel 4 in Oklahoma City at the time of the Oklahoma City bombing. And she had actually found out that there was an Iranian terrorist connection, and that John Doe 2 and 3 and 4, and she had identified all of these various people who were involved with Timothy McVeigh in the attack on Oklahoma City, and she had actually tied this on into either Iraq or Osama bin Laden, or possibly into both of them. And, of course, she had all the sworn affidavits. There were dozens of people that had seen other people, the Islamic people, with Timothy McVeigh. But the government didn't want to hear that, and so the government refused. The FBI agents were told they could not accept her evidence and all these files that she had collected. And the FBI agent said, look, we'd love to take your information, but we can't do it. We've been ordered not to, because if we accept your information, then, of course, it's going to have to be given to Terry Nichols' defense, and that'll just muddy the waters, and so we're just not allowed to take it. Well, that isn't not the reason they didn't want it. It was that the officials in Washington, D.C. didn't want the American people to learn about the Islamic terrorist connection. So anyway, of course, Jaina Davis got very frustrated at this, so she hired David Shippers to try to take this information about the Islamic terrorist connection to Washington, D.C. Of course, she didn't understand, and David Shippers, I'm sure, didn't understand that the last thing that the people in Washington, D.C. wanted to learn was about the Islamic terrorist connection, because they already knew about it. I mean, the people who really run Washington, D.C. had created this whole Islamic terrorist movement, and the last thing they wanted was for the American people to learn the truth. Because if in 1995 we'd known that the Islamic terrorists with direct ties to Osama bin Laden, and there were ties to Osama bin Laden, were involved behind the blowing up of our Murrah building and killing 168 people or 167 people, then they would have demanded we did something at that time. And, of course, our leaders were working on a timetable, and also I think they wanted to give the terrorists all the rope that they needed to do something that would really be dramatic, and that they would use then to rally the American people in this coming war that we are facing now. And so they had to silence and Jaynard efforts, and then, of course, David Shipper's efforts. And David Shipper tried to reach everybody in Washington, D.C. With this story of the Islamic terrorist movement behind the Oklahoma City bombing, and nobody wanted to talk to him. And that included certainly Attorney General John Ashcroft and all of these other so-called righteous people in Washington, D.C. Well, but David was persistent, and of course he knew a lot of people in the FBI and intelligence, but there was nothing they could do. They weren't allowed to accept this information. Well, then about 6 or 8 weeks before the September 11th attack, some of the FBI agents that David Shippers knew came to him and said, look, we cannot come forward, but there is going to be a terrorist attack, and it's going to be coming in about 6 weeks. It's going to be on Lower Manhattan. And, you know, we want the American people to know, but if we come forward, we're going to lose our jobs. So you take the information, and they gave him, whether they gave him affidavits or what they did, I don't know. But they gave David all the information about the coming terrorist attack. So he wanted to get hold of his old friend John Ashcroft. John Ashcroft would not talk to him. Nobody in a key position in Washington, D.C., and that's 6 weeks before the terrorist attack, wanted to know about the coming terrorist attack. Why? Because if they knew about it, question would be asked is, why weren't we on full military alert? Why weren't there planes in the air? Why weren't there marshals on the planes? Why weren't the pilots armed? Why weren't the doors reinforced? Why weren't the airlines warned? Well, I mean, there's so many questions you could ask. But as long as these people had plausible denial, well, shucks, we had no idea. And you hear them saying, why, we had no idea there was going to be a terrorist attack. But David Shippers did, and he tried to get the word out. Same thing happened with our good friend, Dr. Garth Nicholson, because he had been working with special forces and with people from various intelligence agencies. They told him about the attack, and they told him it was going to be on the 11th of September. Now, he was told it was going to be an attack on the Pentagon, and, of course, he tried to get the information out, and he did reach a couple of people in key positions, apparently in the Defense Intelligence Agency or other agencies, and we'll have to get Garth on some evening to talk about that. But, of course, this was in the 6 weeks beforehand. He knew the exact date of the attack. And then when I hear George Tenet and all of these people say, oh, we had no idea, we had no idea when it was coming, and Garth Nicholson was told it was going to be on the 11th of September. Just as Willie Brown was notified that people in the Defense Department canceled their flights on the 10th of September so that they would not be in the air on the 11th of September. And you want to check that out. It's in Newsweek magazine, the 24th of September of last year. And if you want the page, you can give us a call and we'll actually get that for you. They knew exactly what was coming down the line. But, of course, they can't let the American people know that because that would be too horrible to contemplate. Why did they want the attack? Well, how would we ever have gotten us into a war in Iraq in the Middle East if it had not been for that attack? Do you honestly believe the American people would have been willing to go to war in the Middle East had it not been for the September 11th attack? That's what it was all about. And then would the American people have been willing to completely restructure their government and create a constitutional dictatorship to destroy the system of checks and balances which has protected us, our individual freedom, for so long? And yet that's exactly what the Office of Homeland Security is designed to do and what the U.S. Patriot Act is designed to do. And, of course, this new model State Emergency Health Powers Act is one of the most draconian things I've ever read. And if you have not read my summary of it in my my newsletter, I think it's in the May-June letter, you go up on the Internet at RadioLiberty.com and pull that down. Or in my latest newsletter, I give you a summary of what MEPA, that's the Model Emergency Health Powers Act, is going to involve. In fact, my latest newsletter, which is a September newsletter, I'll have to admit, I think it's rather good, and it gives you just a great overview of what's going on and how, of course, wars and tragedies are used to change and transform our nation. So if you'd like if you haven't gotten a copy of our newsletter before and you'd like to get a free copy, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and we'll be glad to send you a free copy of our newsletter. And, of course, we hope that you'll copy that and get it to many other people. And, of course, we hope that many people would want to get that on a regular basis or even join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and partner with us in our efforts to get the information out, because, believe me, time is short, and how much longer we'll be able to talk and tell you the truth. Once we get into a war, of course, it would be unpatriotic to point out that the whole thing was contrived. Once we get into the war, you're not going to be able to condemn the president for the fact that he knew that there was going to be an attack on this country. Now, how do we know that he knew that? Well, he was told on the 6th of August that the Iranian, pardon me, the Islamic terrorists, people, followers of Osama bin Laden, were going to hijack our planes. Now, we do not know what else he knew. And they're keeping that top secret. And in fact, the information given to the intelligence agencies, that's one of the stipulations, they will not reveal what the president knew. Why won't they reveal it? If there's nothing to conceal, why are they concealing it? Well, of course, we don't. That's sensitive material. In the name of national security, we can't let the American people know what the president knew. Why not? Why can't we let the American people know? Well, it's national security. And behind that that shield of national security are many, many crimes that have been committed through the years. And that's being committed right now as the CIA refuses to divulge what the president actually knew. But if you've ever seen the pictures of the president, you know, when he is told if he's there in this, this school talking to the children, and of course somebody whispers in his ear and tells him about the attack on the World Trade Center, and what does he do? Does he look surprised? No, he just turns back to the children and continues, of course, telling them about whatever he's talking to them about. Certainly not the action that you would might anticipate when somebody would tell you that what had been feared the most, that they had hijacked our planes and crashed them into the World Trade Center. Now, did they know it was going to be an attack on the World Trade Center? Of course they knew it was going to be an attack on the World Trade Center. I mean, they had the information, going back to the Operation Bajinka, and of course that was out of the Philippines, and it was a report. It was actually found on the Philippine, by the Philippine police on a laptop computer that belonged to a man named Ramzi Yosef, and he was the master bomber behind the first attack on the World Trade Center in 1993, and he had been allowed to escape and go to the Philippines, and he was over there, of course, he was planning on killing the Pope. He was planning on, and he had already blown up one, he'd blown a hole in one of the transatlantic flights, or trans-Pacific flights, and he was planning on, of course, blowing up 10 or 12 of our major jumbo jets at all at one time and having them all go down at sea. But, of course, the coup de grace of the Project Bajinka, which in Filipino means Big Bang, was to hijack our planes and crash them into the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, the White House, the Sears building, or the Transamerica building in San Francisco. Now, specific Operation Bajinka that was known in 1995. Today I talked to a gentleman who's actually researched this whole thing. He's researched it for a law firm that is actually suing the government, I think, of Saudi Arabia and I don't know what else. Maybe they're suing the government of Iraq. But he's actually gotten the information out of the Philippines. So there is no question that Operation Bajinka involved the World Trade Center. Now, the CIA can't let that information out. So immediately after the attack on September 11th, the Washington Post sent four reporters over to the Philippines to track down the story of Operation Bajinka, and they came back and they said, well, you're right, there really was a plan to hijack our planes and crash them into the CIA building. Now, it's really very interesting because we have something called a briefing. It's put out by Bill Gertz of the Washington Times, and it was published in July of the year 2001, about 2 months before the attack. And there it describes Operation Bajinka and mentioned that it involves the five buildings I've already talked about, the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and the others. And somebody's typing things up on the screen, so I'm trying to read that and maintain my train of thought here. Under any circumstances, the Washington Post sends their four reporters over to the Philippines, and they say, yes, there's a plan. It was a plan, Operation Bajinka was a plan to crash the planes into the CIA building, but specifically no mention of the World Trade Center. Now, why would that be? when we know that Bill Gertz had written about it 2 months ahead of time. I've talked to a gentleman who's been in touch with the Philippine police and gotten all sorts of information out of the Philippines. No question it involved the World Trade Center. Well, because they can't let the American people know that they knew it was the World Trade Center. And the most fascinating thing about this whole story, we have articles out of the World Tribune, I think it was about the 20th of September of last year, 9 days after the attack, and I think it's, we have all of these if anybody wants to see them, and they were talking about Operation Jenka, and of course it was tracking the, attacking the World Trade Center. We have articles out of the German newspapers, and of course it involved a crashing of the World Trade Center. So there's a new book out now, it's being circulated all across America, it's called Breakdown. And it's the story of Operation Pajenka, at least part of that. It really is the story of the breakdown of our intelligence agencies and why they didn't know the attack was coming. But the trouble is they didn't know the attack was coming, and any efforts we've made to investigate it were squashed by the people at the top. But here, Bill Gertz writes this book. Now, we have Bill Gertz's background, or that's what it was called, written 2 months before the attack, and he's talking about the attack, coming attack, or he's talking about Operation Pajenka and the attack on the World Trade Center, and yet in his book, he talks about Operation Pajenka only involving the CIA building. So my friend Dr. Dennis Cuddy called him and said, well, look, you wrote 2 months before the attack that it was going to involve the World Trade Center, and now you say it was only the CIA building. And Bill Gertz said, well, I was wrong. I was wrong when I said it was going to involve the World Trade Center. That was the greatest scoop of all time. He knew exactly what was going to happen. And now he's denying it was a great scoop. So I had an opportunity to interview Bill Gertz earlier this week on the American Freedom Network, and I pointed this out to him. And boy, if you ever heard anybody talk around in circles, because, of course, obviously he doesn't want to admit that he had the scoop of all time 2 months before the attack. And now he's saying, well, I didn't know what I was saying. I was wrong in saying it. And I'm just so sorry I wrote the wrong thing there. It wasn't, they weren't going to attack the World Trade Center. That was not what Operation Pajenka was. But the truth of the matter, that's what it is. And obviously pressure has been put on people to keep them from telling the truth. Because we can't let the American people know that not only did they know what was going to be attacked, they knew the day it was going to be attacked. And the fact, of course, that Willie Brown was notified the night before, and people from the Pentagon were notified Dr. Garth Nicholson had been notified weeks beforehand that September 11th was the target date, that the little boy in New York City, the Pakistani boy attending school a week before the attack, pointed out the window of the schoolroom at the Twin Towers and said, a week from now, those towers won't be there. And then, of course, as Dr. Dennis Cuddy has pointed out, that when the intelligence officers went talking to the people on the streets in New York, everybody knew the attack was coming. So if everybody knew the attack was coming, you mean to tell me our intelligence agencies had no idea the attack was coming? I mean, Dr. Garth Nicholson got his information from FBI agents. David Shippers got his information from FBI agents. So there are FBI agents there who know exactly what this was all about, and of course they can't speak unless, of course, they're called before congressional committees. Otherwise, of course, they'll lose their jobs, and they may very well be incarcerated or, convicted of perjury, or they'll be set up, or they'll plant drugs in their house. Anything to discredit people, because they cannot allow the American people to know until we're involved in the war. And once we're involved in the war and enough Americans have died, then it would be unpatriotic to bring these things out. After all, when we're in a war, we can't speak out against the government. And that's exactly what happened after the attack on Pearl Harbor. I mean, initially, there were many, many people who knew that the president had manipulated this whole thing and left those boys there to die. But, of course, the average individual could not believe that anything could be that evil. And then, of course, when we were well into the war, by 1944, it was very obvious there was enough information that FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, had known when the attack was coming and where the attack was coming. And, of course, there was going to be an election in 1944, and the high officials went to Thomas Dewey, who was the Republican nominee for the presidency, and said, look, you cannot bring this out. You cannot bring this out. It would be unpatriotic. You think of these men out there fighting for America. Have they realized that the president had betrayed the boys at Pearl Harbor? Think what it would do to their morale. Think what it would do to the families of all these boys who died in this war that the FDR created. It would be unpatriotic to bring out the truth. And that's what's going to happen. And that's why I'm trying to tell you tonight and have you get the information. Get my video, 911 Contrived. Get my video, The War in Arabia. Get Dennis Cuddy's book, September 11th, Prior Knowledge. Certainly get, we're offering now the first of the six reports that are available from the intelligence agency. Hopefully we'll have all of them. But we have the first one already and bound now. It's very inexpensive, and it's simply the Joint Intelligence Committee report. It's 30 pages long. We've bound that up, and you'll find there that in 1998, they knew that there was a plan to get a plane and load it down with explosives and crash it into the World Trade Center. It's all there. There was a report after a report after report after report that there was going to hijack our planes and crash them into buildings, and that report after report after report after report that the attack was coming here, and the Moroccan government and the Jordanian government and the German government and the Israeli government, even Putin, the Russian government, the Chinese government had told us the attack was coming in America. And you know what the excuse is of the FBI and the CIA leaders? Well, we thought there was going to be an attack, but we thought it was going to be an embassy overseas. Why would they do that when everybody was telling them there would be an attack here? Because, of course, the thing is they cannot admit the truth, because the truth would be that they were all part of a conspiracy to allow those people to die. Gary Hart, who is the co-chairman of the United States Commission on Security of the 21st Century, and we have an article of Newsmax magazine, on the 5th of September, went to Condoleezza Rice, the National Security Advisor, and said, there's going to be an attack on America. It's coming. It's coming very soon. You've got to start preparing for it. And Condoleezza Rice said absolutely nothing. And then after the attack on America, she said, why, we thought the attack was coming in Europe. We've got the article, if any of you want to see it, where Gary Hart, of course, told her just 6 days before the attack that the attack was coming. But you really need to get my video, the 911 Contrived, and this will give you so much information that you need to know and begin to put it into its whole perspective, because you can't understand anything that's going on unless you understand the spiritual forces behind what's going on. There truly are demonic forces out there that are manipulating this whole thing, the thirst for human blood and human suffering and for the souls of mankind. So you need to get the information, and then, of course, you need to learn how to articulate this and make people understand the histories of wars. Wars are never fought for the reasons that we're told. And if you haven't seen my video, The Little-Known Causes of Wars or Revolutions, you need to get that. And, of course, it gives you the background of how each war has been created during this last century. And, of course, you go back and you read what Plato said, almost 360 years before Christ was born in the Republic, that when the tyrant has, defeated his enemy, and of course there's no more threat, then he's always stirring up a new threat, because the public needs an enemy. Read the report from Iron Mountain, and I quote it in my latest newsletter. And of course this was a so-called think tank. It was an American think tank set up to about 1966 is when the report came out, to determine how you would govern the American people if the threat of communism was no longer there. The threat of communism was used to rally the people behind the government, but what do you do when the threat of communism is gone? And of course the conclusion is, that some people will say, well, peace is a good thing, but and they had various ideas. Well, we'll make the environment the enemy, or we'll try to convince them that there's aliens from outer space to rally the people behind the government. But, of course, one of the items that was mentioned in the conclusion was probably the most important thing that you could do was to have wars. And they said, a lot of people will tell you that peace is a good way to go. But if you really try to understand how to bond a society together, you eventually come to the conclusion that the most efficient means of binding an economy or a society together is by war. And we quote this in our latest newsletter and the exact page and reference. You need to get this information. My latest newsletter, I think, is very, very important. and it'll be up on my website. I hope many of you, of course, will copy it. I hope many of you want to subscribe or join the Radio Liberty family, because you're going to get information from Radio Liberty you're not going to get from other ministries, that's for sure. And so, again, if you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, well, we'll tell you in just a minute. It's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We look forward to your calls at 888-24-LIBERTY or at 464-8295. And we'll be back in just 3 minutes waiting for your calls, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we hope that many of you out there will want to partner with us in our efforts to educate the American people, because our primary purpose is educational. We don't support either political party because we think they're both corrupt at the very top and controlled by exactly the same people with exactly the same goals. Oh, one is pro-abortion, the other is anti-abortion, one's pro-homosexual, the other is anti-homosexual. But of course, as far as they're dealing with communist China, as far as our internationalist goals, as far as the environment, really the issues, they're just about the same. And of course, certainly Bill Clinton did not do away with George Bush's executive orders, and certainly George W. Bush has not done away with Bill Clinton's executive orders. Most of them, they're still in place. Everything is ready for the establishment of a dictatorship in what was once a land of the free and the home of the brave. And, of course, we had the wicked Bill Clinton, and now we've got, of course, the noble George W. Bush. And, of course, one person I really would like to vote for is George Bush's speechwriter. I think he does a great job. I love the way he turns a phrase. But, of course, I don't believe, of course, that either one of them believe what they're saying. But it's just how do you manipulate the American people to go along with this coming war? And we can talk about how terrible Saddam Hussein is, and he is, but so is Mugabe, who we put in power in Zimbabwe, and so is Fidel Castro, who we put in power in Cuba. Yes, we put him in power. We forced Batista to leave, and knowing full well that, of course, Fidel Castro was going to come to power, I know that because I talked to the American ambassador to Cuba, who in 1959 was told to tell Batista, you will leave the following day. So we brought Fidel Castro to power, creating one of the best enemies money can buy. And, of course, we, of course, indirectly financed him through our allies. We, of course, had the phony Bay of Pigs invasion, which was really an ambush, so that you'd give people the idea we could never, of course, free Cuba. We sent those men in to die. We sent them into one place in Cuba where they could not possibly hope to break out and, of course, defeat Fidel Castro. But the American people can't be allowed to know that. They can't be allowed to know how things are manipulated. They can't be allowed to know about Operation Northwood, which was a government program. It was put out by the Joint Chiefs of Staff. We even have copies of that available through our ministry, Operation Northwood. And basically it was a plan where we would either blow up planes or ships and blame it on Fidel Castro, maybe blow up the rocket that was going to take John Glenn into space and blame that on Fidel Castro, anything to create an incident, of course, to justify a war with Cuba. That's how it was done. That was the plan put out by the Joint Chiefs of Staff. It went right up to General Lemitzer. Fortunately, the president wouldn't go along with it. It's covered in, of course, the book entitled Body of Secrets by James Bamford, or if you'd like to get the original copy, if it's up available on the Internet or available through Radio Liberty, that's Operation Northwood. The reality is incidents are created to justify wars, or incidents are allowed to occur to justify wars. We'll be right back here at Radio Liberty. We'll invite your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. And we hope many of you will want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters by giving us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, Dr. Stan back here. Somebody, of course, called in and he asked about any news or on drafting young people, to go off to fight in foreign wars. I haven't heard about it. There's been some talk about it. Obviously, they still intend to have that draft available. That's why, of course, you can't, as you're a young person, you're supposed to register for the good draft. And, of course, they're going to begin tying your draft to your driver's license. If you haven't registered for draft, you're not going to be able to get a driver's license. Why do they want the draft still there? Because, of course, I believe that they know that this war is going to be a lot more bloody and a lot longer than anticipated. Now, I would think that, of course, the war could probably be fairly short. Yes, they may draw us into battle in the cities, but if we really wanted to, why, we would find out where Saddam Hussein is, and instead of going after the periphery and going to the outer skirts of the city, we would drop people right in where he is and simply take him out, or we would drop a couple of very large bombs or even a small nuclear device into that area and kill Saddam Hussein. But instead of killing Saddam Hussein, we're going to kill an awful lot of innocent Iraqis who are forced to fight, for fear that they're going to have their ears cut off if they don't or be executed. An awful lot of men and women are going to die. And I fear an awful lot of American boys are going to die as well. And I don't believe for one minute that this battle really is about Saddam Hussein. I really believe it's eventually going to involve Iran, because we've known since we created this terrorist movement in Iran by bringing the Ayatollah Khomeini to power, that one day, of course, we would go to war with that. And, of course, with that war with Iran and perhaps with Syria and other countries, we are going to get into a terribly bloody war that is going to inflame the entire Muslim religion against America. And I think that's going to have terrible implications as far as the financial situation is concerned, where they're pulling their money out of this country and refusing to deal with us. And, of course, we have in America, at least by one count, about 7 million Muslims, but 1.6 million of them go to mosques, and 80% of those mosques are teaching the radical Wahhabi form of religion. And, of course, this radical Islamic form of religion. Now, this is Wahhabism. This is all financed by Saudi Arabia, our good friends, the Saudis, who are one of the major financiers, along with Iran, of this whole Islamic terrorist movement. And, of course, we've known that all along and have done absolutely nothing to stop it. And, of course, we've actually kept the Saudi family in power, supposedly for oil. No, I don't believe so. I think we've kept them in power in preparation for the Third World War, which I think has been planned for many decades. And we know that our friend Bill Sneblin was told by Manly P. Hall, at least his story is, he was told by Manly P. Hall that in the year 2002 or 2003, there would be a great Third World War in the Middle East. And with that, associated with that, would come a bacteriological attack on the United States. Now, this was in the early 1980s, according to Bill, he was told this. Is it true? I can only relay to you what he's told me. I can't verify it. But my gut feeling is, I think he's absolutely right. And, of course, Manly P. Hall was a Satanist, and we have many of Manly P. Hall's books. He worshipped Lucifer. He was one of the leaders of this whole world Luciferian movement, a 33rd degree Mason, and, of course, he'd gone up into the upper echelons of the rites of Mithras and Memphis and Mithraeum, and was actually schooling Bill Sneblin into the upper echelons of how you would tap into the Luciferian power and become one of Lucifer's disciples. And Manly P. Hall lived until he was well into his 90s. And when he died, the Masonic Journal called him the greatest of all Masonic philosophers. I asked Bill Sneblin, if he'd gone to California to meet with Manly P. Hall. He said he'd met him several times directly, and other times he would appear as an apparition. An apparition? I mean, do things like that really happen? Yes, they really do happen. Many books are actually channeled to people. Certainly the writings of Madame Blavatsky were channeled to her by a demonic spirit. The writings of Alice Bailey were channeled to her. The writings of Barbara Mark Shepherd were channeled to her. The Seth Speaks, you may remember those books a few years ago, they were all channeled to people by demonic spirits. The demonic spirits are real. They're not imaginary. And you better understand that behind this whole move, this terrible, terrible war we're entering, are these demonic spirits. Well, if you agree or disagree, give us a call. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. I'd like to know what you think. Do you favor the war? Do you think that we have to get into this war? It's the righteous thing to do. Or do you think we are making a terrible error that will have prolonged effect on this country? In fact, do you agree with me that after this war, America will never again be the same? We'll be back here in just a minute. We hope to hear from you. Our number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, when you go to war, and most of you are not old enough to remember the last real war we had, which is the Second World War, police action we had in Vietnam, the police action we had in Korea were not real wars, but of course, maybe this won't be a real war either, because we're not going to get a declaration of war on this, but all the laws are in place now. The USA Patriot Act is indeed one of the most frightening pieces of legislation I've ever seen. It includes 150 different sections. It includes 200 pages. This is long-term planning. It includes all the provisions for an authoritarian police state that Bill Clinton could not get enacted following the bombing of the Murrah Building back in 1945, in April of 1945. But, of course, our president, George W. Bush, got them enacted after the September 11th bombing of last year. And, of course, what this does, it redefines terrorism. It redefines terrorism, and of course, almost anything can be terrorism. It has nothing to do with Islamic terrorism. Well, what I mean, I thought this all was about Islamic terrorism and about the wicked Osama bin Laden. No, it's not about the wicked Osama bin Laden. All the evidence suggests Osama bin Laden was working with the Central Intelligence Agency. And if any of you would like that article out of La Figueroa that came out, pointing out that Osama was in the American hospital in Dubai between July 4th and July 14th of 2001. And when he was there, he was meeting with the CIA operative there, and just a few weeks later, why, of course, the American intelligence was able to pick up a member of Al-Qaeda who was going to bomb the American embassy in Paris. How did the FBI know who the person was, or the CIA know who the person was who was going to bomb the American embassy in Paris? Well, when they questioned the man, he said, well, Osama bin Laden ordered me to do it. And, of course, the article in La Figueroa suggested that Osama bin Laden had told the CIA exactly what was going to happen. And, of course, there's a great deal of evidence of this. I actually have another article somebody had sent me from a small newspaper, I think in California, some woman who worked over in the Middle East, and she said some of her friends, or at least one of her friends, had seen Osama bin Laden at the American hospital in Dubai. Now, if wicked Osama bin Laden, who's already killed so many Americans, why didn't we arrest him? I mean, we didn't even have to go into Afghanistan to get him. So why didn't we just pick him up at the American hospital? And why was he meeting with members of his family? Suppose he's estranged from them because his family is very close to the Bush administration. And, of course, why was he meeting with somebody from the CIA? These articles are published all over the rest of the world. It's simply the American people aren't allowed to know this sort of thing. So you must understand that the wicked Osama bin Laden has been created. He's the man we're supposed to hate, the man we focus on. Is Osama bin Laden living or dead? What is he plotting now? When will he attack America again? Well, of course, he really doesn't have to attack America because we are losing our freedom by the new laws which have been passed, and the USA Patriot Act is indeed a frightening law. It allows now the police to circumvent, the federal police, to circumvent the Fourth Amendment. They can certainly search your home. They have to get a warrant. But it doesn't have to have any cause. It doesn't have to have anything to do with terrorism. and it's very going to be very easy to get a federal warrant to search somebody's home. And, of course, they can come in without your knowledge or consent. It's known as sneak and peek searches. They can come into your home, they can steal things out of your house, and you won't even know they've been in there, and that's going to be perfectly all right. You see, it's a violation of the Fourth Amendment, but these people don't believe in the Constitution, and they certainly don't believe in the Bill of Rights. Why? Because the whole purpose of the Bill of Rights is to restrict the power of the federal government so we couldn't have a police state. But you see, police states work very efficiently. Dictatorships work very efficiently. Benito Mussolini got the trains to run on time over in Italy, in the 1930s. That's why everybody thought he was so wonderful. He had a very efficient dictatorship. And the plans are in place for a very efficient dictatorship here in the United States. And under this, you're going to be able to, have police state power centralized in government. You're beginning to merge the federal and the state and the local police. And, of course, you're going to see increasing secrecy so that even Congress and the courts won't be allowed to see the information. Everything has to be secret because we're fighting a war on terrorism. But, of course, since we've redefined terrorism, if you analyze it very carefully, we're really fighting a war against the American people. But we're doing it under the color of law. And it was all voted in by our leaders. And, of course, one of our callers earlier said we ought to vote all the senators out. And I think that probably wouldn't be too bad an idea. Because, of course, there's only one or two senators back there who are really opposing this Office of Homeland Security. Why? Because it does away with checks and balances. It centralizes all power of the executive branch of government. The money automatically comes. It doesn't have to be appropriated by Congress. There is no longer any oversight over what our intelligence committee does or over what the government does. There is no whistleblower protection. You will no longer have a right to freedom of information. Everything is being done to centralize all power with government in the name of fighting terrorism. The trouble is we've redefined terrorism, and it has nothing to do with Osama bin Laden. But if you hadn't had an Osama bin Laden, you'd have to have created one to justify what's going on. Well, we've got Jerry calling in from Los Angeles. Hi, Jerry. How are you doing?
Monteith?
Yeah, good.
Good to hear you. I recommended you as a guest to a local talk show host here in Los Angeles.
Well, thank you. Which local talk show host was that?
What's his name? He's the late evening. I don't know if he could do it, but I don't think anybody else would take you. His name is...
Nobody else would take me?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'm just guessing that he's Doug McIntyre. I think I'll write him a personal letter because I don't think he responds. He hasn't responded to my emails in the past, but he has responded when I have handwritten, notes to him. So no. Maybe I'll send him another note, but handwritten.
Well, you go ahead, Jerry. Let me tell you, though, that, in fact, I have an email that you'd sent me that I haven't answered yet. I'm just about 6 weeks behind in my emails and correspondence, and it's so difficult. And I'm sure for this Doug Maxwell and the others, it's hard to keep up with all the correspondence. And it's not that I don't read. If I don't get back to my people who contact me, I read everything. Sooner or later, I read it, and I try to answer as many as I can, but sometimes I can't. What was that email you sent asked me about?
I can't remember off the top.
All right. Well, I can't remember either. But
I do have a question for you tonight. And his name is Doug McIntyre. And you see him on Politically Incorrect.
All right.
But he goes from 1 to 5 in the morning. I don't know if he can handle those hours.
Oh, listen, I could go from 1 to 5, and maybe have a cup of coffee and take another 4 or 5 hours.
Well, you're a real trooper, and I really love you for that. But, you said something, and I wanted you to give me some kind of documentation. You said that 100,000 Middle Easterners or Muslims had entered this country since September 11th.
125,000, yes.
Where do you get that number?
Oh, it comes out of Human Events, and I can get you the exact... reference to that, but 125,000 have come in since October of, up to finally since September of last year.
I wonder where they got it, because usually immigration statistics don't come out until the to the year after the you know.
But now these are visitors. These are not immigrants. These are visitors to the United States, and they're not Muslims. They're people coming, Muslims coming from countries that are on the terrorist watch list. There is a watch list, and I think it includes probably Syria and Iran and Iraq and Libya and maybe Somalia. I'm not sure what.
Oh, you're not saying that they're,
so
they're immigrants.
These are people, visitors coming into this country from countries that are listed as terrorists by the State Department. So we have allowed that many to come in. And, you know, if we were really serious in this war on terrorism, we would have just sealed ourselves off immediately and stopped that. We would have sealed the borders off. We haven't tried to. And, you know, even Muslims who are living here illegally and the INS wants to really find them, deport them, and the government won't allow them to do it.
Yeah.
Every effort is being made to block the INS from doing its job. Because this whole war on terrorism is all symbolism over substance.
Yeah. You know, in fact, I remember some years ago at this Iranian-run shop. I won't say what kind of shop. I don't want to get too specific. There used to be, you know, I wrote the CIA. Well, there's, you know, they had like this soldier, you know, like menacing, you know, put on the window, you know, and I thought, you know, that, yeah, that might not necessarily be something, but they haven't contacted me, you know, so I don't know if they're serious either about, you know, this war on terrorism. I have my real doubts, you know.
In fact, there was supposedly they have this, you know, this, the TIPS program, that's the Terrorism Information and Prevention Service, and somebody said that they went up on the webpage, and, you know, so you're supposed to, you know, sign up to be an informant for the government. So they signed up to be an informant, but what happened? And, you know, nothing happened for 3 or 4 weeks, and then, and then of course, they were given a telephone number to call. And it was the telephone call for America's Most Wanted, you know, this television program.
You're kidding.
No, no, seriously, this is what it was. But, you know, this all is to convince the American people we have this terrible terrorist threat. Now, down the line, we may have a very serious terrorist threat because we do have a lot of terrorist cells, sleeper cells, but they're all under control. And they're not going to do anything until the word is given. The only question is, who controls them? Well, probably, theoretically, will be Iran. But who put the Iranian terrorist government into power? We did. And behind everything are these spiritual forces. And all you need to do is read a little pamphlet we called The Spiritual Hierarchy, put out by the Luciferians. And they will tell you, we run the world. We have these men in key positions all throughout the world who run everything. And that's what it's all about. Well, they run the enemy, they run our side, and of course everything is to give the people the idea that there's a battle between capitalism and communism, or capitalism and the terrorists, but it's all, of course, simply created.
Well, you know, I think, you know, because I try not to call every call about, you know, conspiracy and these kinds of things, because I don't want to be like... you know, because they won't let me on the air. I think if I call, you know, calling about those issues about it, but I can tell that when I do call, people, you know, call up, and you know, there was like a call about JFK, and then it's like people, you know what I'm talking about, and they sense that there is something to it, you know, and I can tell by the reaction of the callers who called after me.
There are an awful lot of people that know something seriously wrong out there. At least they're the ones who listen to talk radio. People who live nothing but listen to, you know, the mainline radio, or Bill O'Reilly, of course, you know, they are sort of brain dead. But the people who listen to talk radio, they will occasionally hear the truth and they'll recognize it. And I'm really encouraged that I think more and more people are waking up across America.
Oh, I remember what the last email was about, and it was a response to a New York Times letter, because they were defending the right of this this poet laureate of New Jersey, and I wrote to you. I said I wrote to them actually. I said the reason why the corporate establishment hires the left. You know, to, you know, for these black leftist, radicals, you know, these these black nationalists is because it's power, you know, and they want to they want white flight because in that way they're going to reorganize the our society, you know, by making you know the majority of the population, which are white Americans, minorities, in their own country.
Sure, well, the whole idea was to create a multicultural society, and they really succeeded because we let them do it.
Yeah, but you know, but the reason they do it, you know, is because there's also a tremendous amount of money to be made by like white flight. You know, it's just, you know, it's all about power, you know, and that's why, and it's not out of any sort of liberalism that they do it. It's purely out of power and the reorganization of our society.
Well, I think, Jerry, what you have to realize is that the one reason they want a multicultural society is so they can play one group against the other, so they can play the Hispanic against the white,
mm-hmm.
black against the Hispanic, women against men, homosexuals against straights, Christians against non-Christians. I mean, the whole idea is divide and conquer. They know exactly what they're doing. That's why they don't want one language. They don't want a unified country. They want a divided country. And that's why when Senator Hayakawa some years ago, a Japanese-American senator, tried to make America the official language of this country, he was being fought at every turn. He didn't understand, of course, who these dark and sinister forces were, who did not want a unified America. They wanted a divided America because that's how you can control it.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Dr. Stan, I appreciate your show, and I always appreciate when you have open lines, too, because I just wish I knew ahead of time, because I have so many things I'd like to ask you. I think I'm going to have to make a list, you know, so when next time you have an open forum, I'll be ready. Because
right,
there are so many questions I have, but I just can't think of them on the spur of the moment.
Well, you just get a good list there, and next time, I never know when they're going to be open lines. We just sort of happened tonight. But anyway, it was good to talk to Jerry.
All right, thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Okay, fine. That was Jerry calling from Los Angeles. And he's a regular listener down there, and we have listeners out all across the country. And, of course, sometimes we do have open lines. Usually we try to have visitors, because I will tell you that it's a lot easier to have an interesting visitor. I don't have to work so hard. And, of course, you never know when you have open lines when you're going to get a response. Now, this afternoon, we had open lines when our regularly scheduled guest, Bill Gertz, didn't show up. And we actually had a tremendous time. We must have had 8 or 10 calls. It was really sort of exciting. We don't have quite as many here when we just have our internet audience or the local audience. But anyway, of course, I always enjoy open lines. I hope you do as much of it as I do. But also, I expect you to give me a call, because it always helps me when you're out there calling and helping us so that I don't have to do all the work. Well, this is the time, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our leaders. We ask you to pray for our ministers. We ask you to pray for peace. We ask you to pray that for somehow, in some way, that this terrible war that's being planned and has been planned for so many years will not come to pass. We ask for, certainly, revival in America. We ask God's mercy on this country. And, of course, we ask you to pray for our ministry, for our provision, and our protection. And so until next week at the same time, or I guess it'll be tomorrow, we'll be back with you. This is Dr. Stan saying good night, and may the Lord be with you.